Chapter 24. Harry rubbed his temples absently. The tension was thick in the room. He had no idea how Remus had ended up at Grimmauld Place, but he was afraid to ask. Everyone was being extra quiet and cautious, and Harry wasn't sure if it was because of Snape or if it was because of him. He wasn't sure if he dared to bring up anything about the night before. Snape had obviously allowed the others access to Grimmauld Place, which was a good thing, but Harry had no idea how happy he was about it. With the exception of maybe Remus, everyone was tired and out of sorts. "I would like some explanations, Potter," Snape said silkily, interrupting his musings. "No one appears to have a full understanding of what you have been up to." Harry met his gaze steadily. "Honestly, no one will, not until this is all over," he said. "I can't afford everyone to know everything. There's too much at stake." Snape nodded once in acknowledgement. "I understand that. However, I have a far better understanding of the Dark Lord's plans than I do yours. After the events of this last night, it has come to my attention that you have far more plans in action than I was aware of." He eyed Harry calculatingly. "You, Mr. Potter, have been taking a far more active role than I had believed you capable of. You have been delegating tasks and intelligence, while taking on far more than you should be able to," he said. "In other words, you thought I was just following your orders, and Dumbledore's orders, blindly," Harry said sarcastically. "Yes," Snape said bluntly. "There have been a few things that have caused me to question your actions. But with all I've learned this last night, there is obviously far more going on than I've realized." Harry realized Snape wasn't actually asking for specifics. At least, not in regards to the task Dumbledore had assigned him. He wanted to know Harry's general plans and what the hell Harry had been up to without him knowing about it. Harry thought that he'd find that a whole lot easier to answer if he knew himself. "I've had to shift a lot of my priorities," he began, speaking slowly. "When I left Hogwarts, my only real task was the one that Dumbledore gave me. I didn't plan to get involved with anything else. But then Draco showed up with Victoria, and you showed up here." He quietly explained how everything had changed. For the group that was there, Snape, Draco, Narcissa, and Remus, he finally explained all of it. Everything he had been doing. Individually, they each knew bits and pieces, but not one had known about everything. The only thing he left out was the task of finding and destroying the Horcruxes, but he even mentioned that indirectly. "What now?" Draco asked. "I keep doing what I've been doing," Harry answered quietly. "Any information Snape can bring back, I take it to the Order. I try to keep Scrimjaw and the public under control, providing hope," he said sarcastically. "I train with Snape and Remus, defense and offense, light and dark, anything that'll help me in battle. I help the Order in any way I possibly can, including providing more potions. I continue working to keep Voldemort from gaining too much control over the wizarding world, while I work on the means to actually defeat him." He paused thoughtfully. "I've got a home base now. That'll make things a lot easier. I've got allies and developed resources, and I intend to use them." "The means to defeat him?" Snape questioned, paraphrasing Harry's words. "I haven't had much time to concentrate on that problem, with everything else that's been going on," Harry admitted. "But I've got some leads now that I didn't have before. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to Ginny later today." "You also need to talk with Draco and Narcissa," Snape stated. Harry nodded warily, knowing that was not going to be an easy discussion. And Snape seemed to have decided that he should talk to them now. "What can we help you with, Harry?" Narcissa asked gently. Harry eyed Draco, not knowing how he was going to react. His father was often a rather volatile subject. He was suddenly grateful Draco was sitting on the other side of the table. "It's about Lucius," Harry said abruptly, and watched as Draco tensed and his expression hardened. "What about him?" Narcissa asked calmly. Knowing it wasn't going to get any easier, Harry forged ahead, focusing on Narcissa instead of Draco. Before everything happened at the Department of Mysteries, Creature took a locket to Lucius. "Do you know where it is?" Narcissa didn't look happy with the subject, but she wasn't taking offense. She gazed at Harry sadly. "Harry, at the time, my mind was focused on..." She trailed off uncertainly. Remus made a noise, and Harry glared at him warningly, before turning back to Narcissa. "I know. You were focused on my weak links and betraying Sirius," he said impatiently. "I need to know about the bloody locket." She blinked once in surprise, before frowning thoughtfully as she tried to remember. "Creature came to me first. When I was finished with him, he blathered something about a gift for Lucius. Things were a little hectic, but I did manage to ask Lucius about the alleged gift. As you can never be quite certain of anything in regards to Creature." Harry nodded, knowing how true that was. "What did Lucius say about it?" he asked. "Harry," she said his name hesitantly, "he didn't even tell me what it was, only that it would please the Dark Lord greatly if he chose to give it to him."
"He didn't give it to Voldemort, did he?" Harry asked in alarm. For whatever reason, the thought that Voldemort could actually have it back had not crossed his mind.
"No," Narcissa answered immediately, shaking her head. "He said he would discuss it the next day. He put it in his personal vault for safekeeping."
"Vault?" Harry questioned. "His Gringotts vault?"
Draco and Narcissa exchanged a glance before she answered. "No, the Malfoys are an extremely old family. There is a hidden vault at the manor that only the head of the family has access to. Designated heirs are keyed into the wards and spells, so that upon the death of the current head, the next in line will then have access," she explained. Harry was confused, but was afraid he understood the general idea of the situation. "Lucius is the only one who can access this vault where the locket is at. Draco would have access when his father dies," he said. Narcissa flinched, and Draco glared, but they both nodded. "Fuck," Harry cursed. "So I've got to figure out how to get to Lucius now."
"You're not killing my father!" Draco shouted angrily.
"Who said anything about killing him?" Harry retorted. "I need the bloody bastard to get the locket for me." That gave Draco pause, and Harry sneered at him. "Just how do you plan to get Lucius out of Azkaban, let alone get him to cooperate with you?" Snape interjected smoothly.
"I don't have a bloody clue," Harry snapped. "I had hoped to avoid this."
"You're serious about attempting to free my father?" Draco asked incredulously.
"What choice do I have?" Harry asked. "I have to get that locket. If I have to go through Lucius to get it, then that's what I'll do."
"Does Lucius understand its importance?" Snape asked sharply.
"I don't think so," Harry answered. "It's Slytherin's locket, so Lucius surely considers it valuable because of the whole pure-blood Slytherin pride and family heritage thing," he said dismissively.
He paused as he realized the others were staring at him in various degrees of shock.
"And that's not why it's important?" Remus asked.
No, Harry admitted. "It's part of it. Voldemort is Slytherin's last heir, so he considers it to be a very valuable item in that respect. It doesn't have anything to do with why I have to have it, though."
"You mean to destroy it?" Snape said knowingly.
"Yes," Harry agreed, wondering if Snape knew what it actually was. Snape's next comment answered that question, though.
"I am no closer to understanding Dumbledore now than when he was alive," he muttered.
Harry smiled grimly. "I would find this task a lot easier if Dumbledore had actually been a lot more straightforward about all of this," he said.
Snape nodded in agreement. Whatever Dumbledore's reasons for keeping the details secret, both Harry and Snape were respecting the man's wishes. Snape had not once asked for details regarding Harry's actual task. He was only attempting to help Harry as needed. Right now, Harry needed help trying to figure out how to get Lucius out of Azkaban. Silence had fallen over the group at the table, and Harry was hesitant to break it again. How was he supposed to ask if Lucius was still sane in there or not? "Is Lucius an animagus?" he asked, deciding that was the politest way he could ask. He didn't expect Draco's livid reaction. "Yes?" Draco ground out, glaring daggers at Harry. "Lucius's sanity is surely intact," Snape said, drawing Harry's attention, and obviously understanding why Harry had asked the question. "There is no chance of him escaping like Sirius did, though," Remus spoke quietly. "New precautions were implemented after Sirius's escape."
"Perhaps you could get cooperation from Scrimgeour," Narcissa suggested. "You certainly handled him well before."
Harry lowered his head, rubbing his temples as he thought about that possibility. "It took me months to convince Scrimgeour to release prisoners who were innocent," he said. "It would not go over well if I tried to get Lucius released."
"Potter, even the Dark Lord, has been unable to determine a way to free the prisoners," Snape said. "I do not believe this is possible."
"It's not even possible to contact the prisoners in Azkaban," Narcissa said bitterly.
"Ministry officials can get in there," Harry said, thinking about Sirius getting the newspaper off of Fudge. "And Crouch had gotten in." His eyes widened. "And Crouch had gotten out."
"Crouch," he said aloud.
The other three looked at him blankly, but Snape sneered at him.
"Impossible," he said.
"Not impossible," Harry corrected, latching onto his idea.
"You'd need a sacrifice, Potter," Snape pointed out condescendingly. "Do you happen to have someone suitable just lying around?"
Harry scowled. "Couldn't we just replace him with one of the other Death Eaters or something?" he asked.
"Potter, you'd need a Death Eater who you could order to cooperate," Snape sneered. "Imperius and any other magical forms of coercion would be detected. Do you happen to know any Death Eaters willing to sacrifice their life for you?"
he asked sarcastically.
"Sacrifice their life?
Would one owing me a life debt work?" Harry asked. Snape blinked in astonishment.
"There is a Death Eater who owes you a life debt?"
"Pettigrew," Harry said.
"I should have known," Snape said, pinching the bridge of his nose.
"So, would he work?" Harry asked hopefully.
"Possibly," Snape admitted. "But Potter, you don't know what you are suggesting."
"I know exactly what I'm suggesting," Harry said in a cold, hard voice. "I'm talking about walking into Azkaban, dumping off Peter Pettigrew, who should have been in there almost 16 years ago, and walking out with Lucius Malfoy. I'm talking about condemning a man to his death. I'm talking about committing a crime that could easily get me locked up in that place."
His expression darkened even further as he glared at Snape. "Once I have Lucius out of there, I'm going to blackmail the bastard. I'll make sure he knows I have Draco and Narcissa, and refuse to let him see them until he gets me that locket."
"You are not the golden boy I've always thought you were," Snape stated.
"The golden boy isn't going to win against Voldemort," Harry said coldly.
"Indeed," Snape said with satisfaction. "I need to research how we can utilize the life debt, and then we will make further plans."
Harry nodded in acceptance.
"I will help with whatever research you need, Severus," Remus spoke up. "I know precisely the events surrounding the life debt itself, if it's any use."
Snape gave him a curt nod. "Lunch first," Remus said, looking to Harry. "Why don't you and Draco go check out your room?" he suggested. Harry eyed him warily, unable to believe Remus wasn't lecturing him. "I'm here to help, not question," Remus said, smiling slightly. It didn't ease the concern from Remus's face, but it did help reassure Harry, regardless. "You're not going to just turn around and question Snape instead, are you?" Harry asked suspiciously. "No, Harry," Remus said, smiling wider. "I'm not." Draco snorted in amusement. "Harry, do you know how unbelievably bizarre it is to hear you defending Severus?" he asked. Laughing, Draco led a bemused Harry out of the room. Harry walked through the house, realizing he hadn't been paying any attention to all the work Winky had been doing. He'd spent most of his time in the basement, where the kitchen and the potions lab were located. He paused in the doorway of the drawing room, staring in disbelief. The room wasn't recognizable, with the exception of the Black family tapestry that still hung on the wall. Amazingly, the room looked comfortable and inviting now. Climbing the stairs two at a time, Draco following in confusion, Harry threw open the door to his old room. Blinking in amazement, he remembered that he had actually been in this room before. This appeared to be Snape's room now, and he backed out again quickly. "Where's my room?" he asked, baffled by this turn of events. Draco looked at him oddly. "You're the master of this house now," he said slowly. "So?" Harry said blankly. Draco huffed at him, grabbed his hand, and dragged him upstairs. On the top floor, Draco paused before a door. He looked at Harry nervously before opening it with a flourish, stepping inside so Harry could enter first. Wary now, Harry walked into the room. He stopped and stared at the luxuriant room. He was sure this had been Buckbeak's room the last time he'd seen it. The dirty place had been transformed into something far beyond his expectations. The room was done in shades of blue and silver, with lots of rich, soft fabrics. Harry didn't have a clue about such things, but the huge bedroom looked expensive. To one side was a comfortable-looking couch and a couple of chairs in front of a fireplace. A large canopied bed took prominence in the other half of the room. There were wardrobes and shelves filled with books and all manner of things. Paying more attention to some of the details, Harry realized there were dragons everywhere. Small and large figurines were all over the room. Even the couch pillows had dragons patterned on them. "This is your room," Harry said bemusedly, turning finally to look back at Draco, who was still hovering near the door. "Our room now," Draco said, sounding uncertain. "Well, yeah, of course we're sharing a room," Harry said, not unconcerned about that part. "But this," he gestured expansively, "is your room." He gazed around the room again in fascination. "How could your room be here?" "Do you like it?" Draco asked softly. "It's incredible," Harry said. "But how could it be here?" he asked again, stuck on that aspect of the situation. Draco explained how he and his mum had enlisted the house elves to help them shrink and pack many things in Malfoy Manor when they'd gone back that last night. At Harry's incredulous questioning of where they'd put it all while at the Dursleys, Draco admitted that much of it had been packed tightly under the beds and in the closet that they'd emptied of Dudley's old junk. He also described a pair of trunks that, to Harry, sounded suspiciously like Moody's 7-compartment trunk. Harry remembered Dumbledore using a ladder to climb into the trunk with a room large enough to keep a person alive for months. He reckoned it wouldn't be that hard to pack such a great amount of items that way, especially if they'd been reduced in size first. Wandering the room, Harry discovered their own personal bathroom and a walk-in closet that housed an outrageous amount of clothing. It didn't particularly surprise him that Draco owned that much, but seeing the proof was rather daunting to someone who simply threw on whatever was closest in the morning. During the night, Draco, Narcissa, and Winky had worked to put this room together. Draco didn't say it explicitly, but Harry got the message that once the room was done, Draco hadn't been able to hold back his anxiety any longer, and had gone to the twins' flat to search out Harry. Harry felt guilty again at the reminder that Draco hadn't gotten any sleep the night before, worrying about Harry's whereabouts.
"So, this your actual bed?" Harry asked, grinning wickedly as he fell backwards onto it.
"Yes," Draco said, smirking as he towed off his shoes, before crawling onto the bed and straddling Harry's hips. "It's far more comfortable than that tiny bed we've been sleeping in."
"This does feel terribly nice," Harry said slyly, shifting his hips slightly.
Draco inhaled sharply, before leaning down to capture Harry's lips hungrily. They were engaged in a very pleasant snogfest when it registered that Remus was yelling for them to come down for lunch. Groaning, they spent a couple minutes composing themselves before they went back downstairs. Snape took one look at them when they appeared and rolled his eyes.
"I take it your new room meets your approval, Potter," he said sarcastically.
Harry blinked innocently. "I'm sure the room is quite nice. Thank you for asking," he said pleasantly. "I'm afraid I didn't have enough time to appreciate it all, as I was rather preoccupied." Draco choked on his laughter. Snape snorted. In amusement or disgust, Harry wasn't quite sure, and Remus and Narcissa were shaking their heads in wry amusement. Keeping up the innocent facade, Harry turned to Draco. "Are my manners improving, love?" he asked. Draco nodded, laughing too hard to answer otherwise as he collapsed into one of the chairs. Harry laughed with him, absolutely delighted that he'd been able to make Draco laugh like that. It felt good with all the stress they'd been under. Lunch was surprisingly relaxed and pleasant. There was room for a feeding chair for Victoria, and Harry fed her while he ate his own meal. He enjoyed the time chattering with her. He learned that she'd been with Winky all morning, while Winky worked on setting up a nursery for her. The nursery was to be on the third floor, across from Narcissa's room. He didn't know exactly how Remus had ended up there, but discovered that Remus had a room of his own, too, on the second floor, across from Snape. He still wasn't sure what exactly was going on between Snape and Remus, but he at least learned that Snape had brought Remus to Grimmauld Place early that morning. Harry reckoned whatever Remus had written in that letter must have had a powerful impact on Snape. Draco hadn't been able to tell him much about what had happened after he'd stormed out the night before. Draco had been kicked out of the room while Snape talked to his mum, and after that he'd been ordered to start packing things up and getting it all moved to Grimmauld Place. Whatever discussions had taken place, it seemed to satisfy Snape enough that he hadn't subjected Draco and Narcissa to Veritaserum. Harry was both surprised and happy with that fact. He hoped that it meant Snape had at least a little faith in him. He ruefully admitted to himself that it probably meant Snape thought he could control the Malfoys. He looked around at the group, happy despite the oddness of the situation. Something had definitely shifted for this group of people to be so relaxed together. But it was nice. Fox trilled a greeting, as if he could hear Harry's thoughts and agreed with them. Harry grinned at the bird, resting on his perch, which had been placed in a cozy niche near the doorway. This room was definitely the best place for him, as busy as it always seemed to be. Harry made an extra effort to pet him and give him a little attention before heading back upstairs after lunch. It was a little odd, he realized, that Hedwig's cage and the snake tank were amongst the only visible evidence of Harry's belongings that existed in his and Draco's new room. Looking around, he did finally notice his firebolt, along with Draco's broom, leaning up against the wall in the corner. He assumed his clothes were in one of the wardrobes, and there were two desks, so one had to be meant for him. Draco's influence could be seen all over the room, though, and Harry had to wonder if he really belonged.
"Does it bother you to have all my things here?" Draco asked quietly, having been observing Harry since they'd gotten back.
Harry shook his head.
"This is all just really different,
and I'm wondering where I fit in, he admitted. I don't look like I exist here any more than I did at the Dursleys. I didn't unpack any of your personal items, Draco said. Draco, I don't have any personal items, Harry said dryly. Then we'll have to change that, Draco retorted. Now come here and lay down with me. I'm exhausted, and I know you are tired as well. They'd actually been sent to their room, ordered to take naps. Harry had felt like a 5-year-old, but he had to admit that some sleep sounded like a good idea. He could afford to take the rest of the afternoon off. Once he lay down, with Draco curled around him, he gave up on thinking altogether. Thinking was far too stressful, and lying with Draco in an amazingly comfortable bed was too wonderful to waste the time being stressed. This article is well written, Remus said. Harry shrugged. Hermione and Ginny wrote it. I certainly wouldn't have been able to write it that well, he admitted. I'm supposed to be looking it over and making any changes before taking it back to be published finally. Snape held out a hand, requesting the article. Harry continued to play with Victoria while he waited for Snape to read it. They'd all retired to the drawing room after dinner, and Harry thought they made an odd little group. The drawing room was cozy and comfortable, though. Draco and Narcissa were looking over the Black family tapestry that was on the far wall. Harry was half listening to them. Draco was getting a family history lesson in terms of who'd been excluded from the family, and exactly why they were excluded. Potter, there is conspicuously not a single mention of the Death Eaters, Snape said, frowning at him. I told you before that I was doing the article my way, Harry said dismissively. You honestly believe that Scrimjaw will accept this? Snape asked. It's not an assignment where he gets to mark me on the damn thing, Harry retorted. It's a bloody article that's going to go out to Merlin knows how many people. Once it's out, he'd be hard-pressed to deny any of it. Snape snorted in disgust. He will have no need to deny any of it, as you are deigning to actually praise the ministry in this blasted thing, he said. That was the deal, Harry said, bristling defensively. He's done everything that I asked, so now I need to fulfill my end of the bargain. He will not see this as fulfilling your obligations, Snape said. Remus spoke up quietly. The praise of the ministry is wonderfully understated. Harry is not giving them complete support, but carefully concedes that the ministry has been slowly becoming more effective lately. I believe Scrimjaw will be pleased with it. Scrimjaw will be pleased, but he wishes for vengeance, as do most wizards and witches, Snape sneered. If Potter does not address the issue directly, surely Scrimjaw will once again be looking closely into his activities. The bargain unfulfilled could mean Victoria's certificate being suddenly found and made public knowledge. Paranoid much? Harry muttered. Snape glared at him. Potter, you are risking that child, he said. I'm not, Harry exclaimed hotly. I'm thinking ahead. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Well, I'm actually doing it for once. When Voldemort's dead and you can come out of hiding, what would it look like if I'm suddenly defending people that I've been declaring vengeance against? It's bound to make things easier later if I don't openly declare vengeance to start with. The room was suddenly silent. Even Victoria was silently chewing on one of her toys. Harry couldn't figure out why Snape, Draco, and Narcissa appeared to be stunned. What? He asked defensively. Is it really so hard to believe that I can actually think ahead now and then? Remus had been smiling, and he chuckled at Harry's last comment. It broke Snape from his silence, and he shot a glare at Remus. This does not concern you, he sneered. Remus stared at him challengingly. Doesn't it? He said. I believe it does concern me, as I will be standing right next to Harry when it comes time. You and I have already addressed this issue, Severus. And it would appear that you've passed on your foolishness to Potter, Snape said in disgust.
I haven't spoken to Harry about it, Remus said in denial.
Ah, then it is simply Gryffindor idiocy shining through in both of you.
Severus, whether you consider it foolish or not, Harry and I will do everything in our power to give you back your life when this war is over,
Remus said quietly. He and Snape both glanced at Harry.
And yes, Harry has a lot of power to make it happen.
It's not possible, Snape said harshly. Harry had been following the conversation closely and had caught on to Snape's problem. Now he narrowed his eyes.
We obviously have different definitions of what's not possible, he said, his voice low and hard.
It is impossible for Harry Potter to work with Severus Snape and Draco Malfoy. It is impossible for the Malfoys to turn against Voldemort. It is impossible for the model Gryffindor to be able to successfully cast the Killing Curse.
Harry matched Snape's glare, pausing for emphasis.
It is impossible that the fate of the wizarding world rests in the hands of a 16-year-old. I live in the world of impossible, he stated coldly, as do you.
Snape wasn't about to relent so easily.
I will never teach at Hogwarts again, Potter, he said, barely controlled anger brimming in his voice. Anything I may have gained was permanently lost when I killed Albus Dumbledore. It is very likely that I will not even survive this war myself.
Fuck you, Snape, Harry sneered. You're not getting off so fucking easy.
You think death is easy? Snape asked coldly.
You're not going to die, Harry said angrily. You're going to help me wipe the evil bastard out of existence, and then we're all going back to Hogwarts where we belong.
Your arrogance blazes through brilliantly, Snape said disparagingly.
I don't care what you call it, Harry said, scowling furiously. All I know is that we're not going through all of this for nothing. Voldemort is all about hypocritical prejudice. I'm not going to go through all the work of vanquishing him to simply put up with more of the same shite from everyone else.
You truly believe Gryffindor ideals will make an impact on a prejudiced society? Snape questioned. It will not happen, Potter.
The fuck it won't, Harry declared. When I mix Gryffindor ideals with the Slytherin ability to take advantage of a situation, I will make it happen.
Snape didn't respond, staring at Harry calculatingly.
Harry is a very determined young man, Severus. Remus spoke up quietly. He also has the power that society has given him, whether he wanted it or not. I do believe he is prepared to actually use that power now.
I'll do whatever is necessary to keep people from being wrongly persecuted, Harry said darkly. He gestured to the parchment that Snape was still holding. That includes not saying things that would go against my case once Voldemort is dead. Feeding people's desire for vengeance would not help any of us.
Snape gave no indication of backing down or giving in. After several long, tense seconds, he simply changed the subject.
This article has too much of Ms. Granger's voice, he declared. It is far too wordy to believably be written by you.
I reckon you want me to rewrite it, Harry muttered. Snape's lips curled up at the edges.
An article written by you should contain more of your rather passionate expressiveness, he said. I do not believe Ms. Granger or Ms. Weasley has effectively captured your voice.
Remus was smiling warmly. Perhaps you could add some subtle groundwork for future events, he suggested.
Harry, be subtle? Draco scoffed, sounding amused. He'll need some help.
Harry addressed Remus. You're taking the blame when Hermione wants to know why my article has changed, he warned.
Remus chuckled and nodded in agreement.
I believe I shall point out that assignments for classes will have a different voice than other types of writing, he said. It is a fact I am sure she is aware of, yet she struggles with writing outside of coursework mode.
Harry certainly believed that, thinking Hermione was going to miss attending classes the most if they didn't start back at Hogwarts in autumn.
Draco took over the physical writing as the group reworked and built upon the article that Hermione and Ginny had already written. It was a rather spirited discussion which Harry found himself actually enjoying. By the time he was rewriting the article in his own handwriting, he had to admit that it sounded far more personal than it had previously. The next day, things got a little sticky when Harry presented the article back to Hermione. She was suspicious and disgruntled that her hard work had been edited so drastically. Remus came along and helped explain things, but Harry still spent a fair amount of time attempting to smooth her ruffled feathers. As he half-listened to Hermione critique every other line of the article, he glared daggers at Ron, who was conveniently on the other side of the yard talking with Remus. With a whispered, "Good luck, mate," Ron had left Harry to face Hermione by himself. Harry couldn't help but think that the bloody article had been more trouble than it was worth, and it hadn't even been published yet. Luckily, by the time it came out, he would have already dealt with everyone who actually mattered. Rather than arguing over the thing again, he'd have been much happier going with Draco. Draco likely wasn't having a particularly good time either, but he was surely having a better time than Harry. While Harry was busy at the Weasleys, Draco was meeting with Blaise at the Shrieking Shack. Harry grinned inwardly, remembering Draco's outrage at breakfast when Remus had explained the haunted house. Draco had agreed to use it as his meeting place, though, and at least Harry wasn't too worried about anyone finding them there. Draco and Blaise were working on possible plans for the Slytherins that didn't want to become Voldemort's army of Death Eaters. How they planned to do that, considering they couldn't tell anyone anything, Harry wasn't sure. He did know that Draco, at least, planned to give Blaise one of the coins, so they had that communication set up. Hermione sighed in exasperation and set the article aside, clearly recognizing that she'd lost Harry's attention. "Harry, what have you been doing?" she asked. Her gaze flicked over to Remus on the other side of the yard, then back to Harry. "I thought you were staying at the Dursleys until your birthday, which is still a week away, but you keep popping up with Lupin." He startled at the realization that his birthday was coming up soon, but he didn't want to admit that he'd already left the Dursleys. That would bring up any number of issues, ranging from Victoria to Snape to not staying at the Weasleys, that he did not want to talk about. He knew how to distract her, but it wasn't his favorite topic of conversation. "I reckon with Sirius gone, Remus probably feels it's his duty to look out for me now," he said. "Oh," Hermione said, her expression instantly turning sympathetic. "Are you all right with that?" she asked hesitantly. His brow furrowed as he consciously thought about it. He realized with surprise that he was all right with that. He felt a little guilty, but Remus was more like a father to him than anyone had ever been. His frown deepened. But then, how did Snape and Narcissa fit into that line of thought? They were looking out for him as well. Narcissa had definitely taken to mothering him, almost as much as she did Draco. Everything with Snape, though, was complicated. He couldn't talk to Snape about personal issues like he could with Remus, but it was Snape he was counting on, more than anyone else, to actually help him get through the war. "Harry," Hermione said, interrupting his thoughts and bringing his attention back to her. She was gazing at him worriedly. "I'm all right, Hermione," he said thoughtfully. "I'll always miss Sirius and my parents, but Remus? Well, he's here. I know he cares for me, and no matter what I do, I know he'll accept me." If he hadn't known that before, Remus had proven it by accepting his relationship with Draco, let alone everything else going on in his life. "You see him as a parent, don't you?" she asked. "Yeah," he admitted. "I'm not sure if it's appropriate or not, but I do." "Well, he was close to your parents and Sirius," she said. "I think they'd approve." Harry pushed thoughts of family aside as Hermione steered their conversation back to Horcrux and war-related issues. He listened intently as she explained some of the things she was learning about snakes and basilisks. That information would likely be useful, particularly when it came time to kill Nagini.
The conversation became much more difficult when it came to the other Horcruxes. "Harry, have you thought of any way to search for the locket?" Hermione asked. Harry shrugged. He wondered what she would say if he told her Snape was working on a solution to that problem. "I was thinking," Hermione said, picking up the article again, "that perhaps you could talk to Scrimgeour."
"Why?" Harry asked, brows raised incredulously.
"Well, we need to search Malfoy Manor, right? Maybe Scrimgeour could get us in there. You do seem to have some leverage with him," she said.
"The joys of being the bloody chosen one," he muttered sarcastically. Hermione frowned at him in disapproval, but otherwise ignored his comment.
"With the Ministry and Auror backup, we could search for the locket, and maybe they'd even be able to capture Malfoy," she added.
Harry scowled. It was the best reaction he could come up with, knowing he should probably be flying into a rage about Draco. He was thinking more, though, about Hermione's idea. If he didn't have access to Severus, and the Malfoys themselves, he'd probably think it was a good plan.
"Do you think you could get Scrimgeour's cooperation without telling him what you're searching for?" Hermione asked.
"Possibly," Harry admitted. "Scrimgeour was a pain in the arse, but like much of the bloody wizarding world, he put a lot of faith in Harry being able to actually end things with Voldemort." "I reckon it's a good idea," he said grudgingly, and it would hopefully put Hermione off for a bit while he went about his own plans. "I'll go talk to him soon and see if I can get him to help." Hermione nodded in satisfaction.
"Good. That's settled. So we just need to decide when to go back to the chamber," she said.
"I'd still like to talk with Ginny," Harry said, his jaw tightening.
"Harry, it wouldn't be good for her," Hermione said, her disapproval back in place. "Besides, it's not right to bring her into it. We're not allowed to talk to anyone else about the Horcruxes. You know this."
"I don't want to tell her about the actual Horcruxes," Harry said, glaring at her. "I just want to find out what she remembers. Maybe she's got some clues that'll help."
"Dumbledore already talked to her," Hermione snapped. "What do you think you're going to learn from her that he didn't?"
Harry clenched his jaw, not daring to speak. Even if he wasn't angry with Hermione, he wasn't sure he could explain. He didn't know why he felt so strongly about it, but he'd been mulling over thoughts of Voldemort and Hogwarts and the chamber for a long time. And Ginny had been there. She'd talked with Tom Riddle. She'd understand and be more likely to help than anyone, particularly as he didn't even really know what he was looking for. Hermione seemed to take his silence as agreement with her, and blithely went on to suggest plans to check into the chamber over the weekend, after she'd had more time to research basilisks. He realized bitterly that she didn't expect to find anything, and was only humoring him. The only reason she was agreeing to the trip down into the chamber was because of the basilisk. And how was he supposed to argue with her when he only had vague suspicions? As they prepared to leave, he rubbed absently at his scar. He spent far too much time trying to think like Voldemort. They met Luna and her father over lunch in town. It went well enough, and Harry was rather amused by the fact that Luna definitely took after her father. Remus's mild-mannered personality helped to ease some of the Lovegood's enthusiasm, which Harry was sure that Hermione was eternally thankful for. He wasn't so amused by the fact that Ron and Hermione made it impossible for him to talk to Ginny. It was another 2 days before Fred and George could arrange to get her away from the Burrow. The time wasn't exactly wasted, because he spent it training with Snape and Remus instead, but he was still anxious to talk to Ginny and follow up with any possible leads he had to find the Horcruxes.